Hey, Immigrantly family, this is Sadia Khan. I have some great news for all of you. We recently launched our newsletter, which comes out 3 times a week. It's called Hyphenly, which is our no-fluff newsletter with hot takes, heartfelt stories, and all the feels of living in between cultures. Come for the nuance, stay for the vibes. You can find the link to subscribe in our show notes. Don't forget to subscribe. Welcome to the Immigrantly Hive. I'm Sadia Khan, an entrepreneur, immigrant, immigrant mom, cat mom, critical thinker, and your host. Lately, I've been reflecting on how we show up in the world and what we lead with each day. For me, that means paying closer attention to the emotions I carry into each conversation. So from now on, before each interview, I'll share the emotion I'm leading with as a way to stay honest with myself and with you. And today, I'm leading with hope. Hope to reclaim spaces that were once kept away from us as immigrants. To reclaim the complexity, the full complexity of who we are, and to take pride in our immigrantness. That sense of reclamation leads me to a topic I truly enjoy talking about. Beauty and makeup. Let me be honest. Makeup has never been my strong suit. My signature look, if you follow me on my Instagram, has always been a touch of red lipstick and a hint of blush. And don't even get me started on eyeshadow, contours, and all the other facets of beauty. And yet, I deeply admire people who treat makeup as an art, who see it as a language of identity and expression, and who create inclusive spaces for faces that too often feel unseen. Priyanka Ganju is one of them. Priyanka worked in corporate beauty at Estee Lauder and Ipsy before launching Kulfi Beauty in 2021, with a mission to build a South Asian-centered brand that is playful, expressive, and inclusive. Her brand began with kajal. She called it Nazar No More, which basically means no more evil eye. She has spoken often about never feeling included in beauty spaces and how Kulfi is meant to shift that narrative. But Priyanka's story is so much more than the brand that she created. She is an immigrant, an entrepreneur, a hustler, and somebody who really believes in the power of human connection and inclusivity. And today she joins me to talk about shaping narratives in beauty, the intersections of identity and art, and the emotion landscapes of seeing or not seeing your own face reflected in the mirror. And by the way, the crackling sound that you hear in the beginning is Sheru, my cat, playing with his toy. I just didn't want him to stop playing, so I did not intervene. I hope it's not too inconvenient. So without further ado, let's jump right in. Welcome to Immigrantly, Priyanka. So happy we could do this. How are you doing?
I'm so excited to be here. I'm good. It's such a nice fall day today. So I'm excited to enjoy my favorite season of the year.
Absolutely. And guess what? I am wearing a Kulfi lipstick. So this is first sari shade, which I recently bought and I'm obsessed.
It looks amazing. And first sari is our best seller, which is so affirming for me because it's actually the color of the first sari I ever wore for like a school function growing up.
Oh, so now we have a backstory. That's wonderful. So Priyanka, I have been listening to a lot of podcasts. I'm a podcast listener, a consumer. And I recently came across a podcast where a guest was talking about how we should identify what we lead with every single day. Like, what emotion do we lead with? And I was thinking, this is a great way to introduce guests and to introduce myself to new listeners. So in my intro, I talk about how today I'm leading with hope. So I want to start by asking you, on this day, what are you leading with?
I'm leading with gratitude. We have some very exciting news that we're going to move into our first sort of real office space. I just saw it yesterday in person for the first time. We're close to signing, touch wood. So I think just knowing that we've even come this far from where we started packing orders from my apartment, like where our stock was in my cupboard, you know, instead of my clothes, going from that to now having our own office space in New York and being able to have that space of our own is just, I'm so grateful.
So let's rewind. You grew up in India. What made you come to the US?
It's a really good question. I don't think ever growing up, I was like, I'm going to come to the US. I grew up in India. I was in Delhi till I was 18. And then I had the opportunity to go and study in Singapore. And that happened really organically. The university came to our school and they shared sort of more about their programs. And I thought, this was fun. This was different. And they had a scholarship, which was important for me because my parents couldn't have afforded to be able to send me otherwise. And so I applied for that scholarship and I got in. So I moved to Singapore for undergrad. I actually studied engineering, as all good Indian kids do, but found myself drawn to business. And so I started working at a consulting firm after I graduated. And one of the kind of next steps in the career ladder, you know, we're kind of like climbing the career ladder then, was to get an MBA. And that's what really brought me to the US, because I applied for an MBA. And that's kind of, that was when I moved when I was 25.
So tell me, how is Singapore different from the US?
It's very different. I think like culturally, it's also diverse, but in a very different way, because there's a lot of Asian communities there. I think like it's also a little bit more easier, like it's more plug and play in terms of lifestyle, because I feel like the transition kind of going from India to moving to Singapore was pretty seamless for me. I think it also is the stage of life. I was very young. I was 18. There was like other kids who were sort of my age that were part of my cohort. And so it was just like a very seamless experience where I felt really welcome. I think the US is very different. It's definitely had much more of that cultural shock moment when I moved here for the first time. But I do think what really kept me here is, I think, just like the level of affirmation and creativity I've been able to experience. And, you know, I don't think I could have built Kulfi in any other place. And so I think for me that the freedom to sort of like do and be much more has been really exciting. And I feel like that's, you know, part of the American DNA is like believing that you can make anything happen. And so I do think that that was something that I really enjoyed about being here.
You're absolutely right. And at least that's the dream that's sold, right? Whether it materializes for everyone or not is a different story altogether. But what was the most bizarre cultural moment for you when you came to the US?
I think it was my first or second week in school. I was getting my MBA. And I think like someone had a whole conversation with me, assuming I was someone else. And I realized like how they probably put all like maybe Indian people, South Asian people in the same bucket. And it kind of like clicked for me that I think some of that individuality felt like it was being stripped away. And I thought that was really interesting because I'd never had that experience before. So that was definitely like a bit of a culture shock. I also was, you know, I moved from Singapore to what I think is the capitalism capital of the world, which is Harvard Business School. It's this great school. It's the best. But it also is very focused on accomplishment and achievement in a very specific way, which I think was a little bit of a departure from like how I think about myself. You know, what I love about being able to do with Kolfi is, of course, we want to make money, but we also want to like have something really exciting and fun and new to add to the world. And I feel like sometimes that can get lost when everyone's talking about how much success they've achieved.
So Kolfi wasn't your first venture out of business school, right? You worked at Estee Lauder, you worked at Ipsy. How was that experience? Like, what tools did you learn in these spaces that you could apply to Kolfi?
I think those experiences were very formative. I think at Estee Lauder, what was interesting was recognizing the power of a brand. They have iconic brands like, you know, Bobbi Brown, Jo Malone, MAC. I was working with some of these brands, and these brands like really stood for almost like a cultural moment. Like MAC was the first brand probably to create shades for a lot of undertones and the first to be like, it's for everyone and sort of really welcome a very diverse community. And I think knowing that brands can stand for so much more than just product. I think I learned that at Estee Lauder. And then Ipsy, which is a beauty subscription service, was my first operational role and kind of a startup role. And so that was kind of where it clicked for me that if you can imagine something, you can actually make it happen. And, you know, I did that within my role in merchandising. And I think kind of gave me the confidence to be like, it's not impossible for me to like try to build something if I want to.
Abercrombie denim is everything right now. Denim should feel like this. Confident, easy, like your butt has never looked better. If you didn't know, Abercrombie's Curve Love denim went viral for eliminating waist gap, and it's still a game changer. Between that and their classic fits with a straighter line from waist to hip, the perfect denim does exist. Shop Abercrombie denim in the app, online, and in-store.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
I am always fascinated by entrepreneurs and how they bring things to life. So let's dive right in. From ideation to execution to physical office space that you're getting now, how did the whole thing start?
I had been thinking about the space since 2017. Actually, that was the year I got married. My wedding was in India and I was going through the motions of sort of, you know, outfit planning and makeup planning. I realized that a lot of the products that I wanted to bring didn't exist in the market in India. And my family, my friends were like, oh, can you bring me this and this and this? And like, it kind of made me realize that there's this gap that no one's sort of speaking to. And it's something that I had experienced in my day-to-day life as well, where, you know, even though I had access to a lot of beauty products working in the industry, I still struggled to find shades that complemented me, that didn't make me feel washed out, that didn't make me look orange or gray. And it kind of all clicked, being like, wait, this is such a huge number of people, me and, you know, everyone I know, and beyond that, that really haven't felt included in the beauty space, both from the perspective of products that really make us feel our best selves, but then also storytelling and cultural narrative that really hasn't been included in the beauty industry, even though we're the source of some of the most like amazing beauty rituals. And so that was sort of when the idea first started. And because I was in the merchandising role, my goal was to find brands who are doing that and then hopefully work with them and sort of, you know, help them and partner with them. But there weren't any brands. And so that was sort of like the challenge that I faced. I was like, wait, I'm waiting for someone else to do it. And then in 2019, I was like, let me just try to do it myself.
Huda Beauty was around before that, right? That's probably one of the brands that does address the issue of different shades, colors, inclusivity. Did you not see it like that? Or were you looking for something different?
I think for me, it was more the cultural storytelling piece that I think was really, really missing. And even if you think about the models, like you barely ever had like South Asian models in campaigns. And so I think there is that piece of it. And then I think with colors and undertones, I think South Asian undertones are also specific in terms of being olive gold. And so was there like a hyper focus on getting those right? I don't know if like that level of focus exists outside of brands that are like really, really speaking to that audience, which isn't to say like, of course, shades exist, right? Like even NARS has some beautiful shades, Makeup Forever, MAC we spoke about, right? Like you can mix and match and find shades in all of these assortments, Huda included. But I want to take away that thinking for people to be like, okay, if I go to Kofi, I will find shades that will look good on me. And I think that's something that I hope we can offer our consumer.
Side note, my daughter is obsessed with Kulfi. The amount of money she spends on Kulfi, like we could honestly buy a car.
What's her favorite product?
She wears a lot of your tint, but she's obsessed. And when I told her that I was interviewing you, she was like, can you please tell her how much I love Kulfi? So you really tapped into that South Asian market. A lot of young girls felt the need for a brand like Kofi, but now you have this idea. Where did the money come from?
Yeah, it's a great question. In 2019, when I was like, okay, I'm going to leave my job, and I had about $100,000+ saved. And I was like, this is it. This is going to be the money that's going to make us big. I was very naive. I think every time things take so much more money, so much more time than you imagine, but it was a starting point. And so that was sort of the initial investment. The company was my own savings. And that got us to launch day. So that was Feb 2021. So we were planning to launch earlier. That's what I'm saying. Everything takes longer. Then COVID happened, unfortunately. That really pushed out our product launch timelines. It was sort of a weird environment. I think it was really hard also mentally to be in this space where I'm trying to create something and then the whole world is sort of like shutting down around you. But that was sort of how we got started. And that got us to spending on product, which was probably 30%. And then 30% was sort of the campaign assets we did. We had this beautiful launch campaign that was called Nazar No More. And it spoke to, you know, Kajal as a way to express ourselves and to push back against Nazar, which we define as the patriarchy and Eurocentric beauty standards that have held us down for so long. And then another 30%, I would say, was like we had a PR agency and a couple of people who were helping. So just kind of making sure we can get the product out there and have some working capital. But I would say that that was just enough to get us to launch day.
So you started with eyeliners, as you said, Kajal. You called it Nazar No More, which is no more evil eye for people who don't know what Nazar is. Why there? Why not launch a lipstick or a blush? Why start with eyes?
It actually happened very organically with conversations and interviews I had with people. So when I left my job, I was like, of course, I have this view and I have these issues with shades. Like, do other people have them? And actually, the product I was working on was our concealer first, because that was the, you know, I have dark circles. That's the product that I knew there was a space for it, right? So that was the one that I was working on in the background. And so in that process, I was, you know, there was a Facebook group and I reached out and I said, I'm starting this makeup brand. Like if you would love to meet me. So I met like absolute strangers who were so lovely to meet me at random coffee shops in New York. And I was like, bring your makeup bag. I want to know sort of what you like, what you don't like. And they all talked about Kajal. And they were like, you know what? I used to wear Kajal, but I don't anymore. It smudges. Or like I have it from like my mom bought it from Pakistan or India or whatever. And like, I don't love it anymore. And it's just like not my vibe. It feels like it's my mom's Kajal, basically. And I thought that was like such an interesting thought, because everyone has it. Everyone knows and wants to wear it, especially if you have a shadi or like a, you know, wedding ceremony or any like festival to attend, but they're not feeling good about it. And I feel like that was kind of my aha moment, being like, that was my first makeup product too. It was kajal. It was like, you know, stealing my mom's kajal. And so I was like, I just have to do it just because of how emotionally resonant that is for us. And, you know, knowing that traditionally it was made at home and we love that intense pigment, that buttery glide, but how do we make that without having sort of that smudging and messiness? And how do we make it in a really user-friendly format? And also add in, outside of the classic black colors, like we have a teal blue, we have a plum, we have a terracotta. How do we add some color and fun into that assortment?
So what kind of reaction did you get? What was the response, the user response? Were there any critics?
I think overall, we got an overwhelmingly positive response. We had built a very close-knit community through a blog. We used to have this blog called Coffee Bites. And through that, that was kind of how we got the initial word out, was the community we had built through that. And in addition, we got some great press coverage for our campaign and our story. Because again, at that time, nobody was speaking about this, right? It was so fresh. It was so new. So we got a lot of like press coverage and we had this community we had built, and overall everyone was incredibly, incredibly positive. I mean, I think they're skeptics, you know, and I think they're skeptics regardless of whatever you do and whatever level of success you achieve. You'll always have people who will be like, okay, but you know, what next? What are you going to like? You know, I think our vision of creating this joyful, aspirational South Asian brand was something that people didn't quite understand. They didn't think like it had legs. We just had to prove them wrong.
Why is that?
I think because they hadn't seen it before. They were used to seeing brands that are, you know, aspirational lifestyle that are not like culturally rooted. The other interesting thing is that with South Asian brands, of course, those exist in the beauty industry, but they were typically like Ayurvedic brands or like had an ingredient story. There was like a specific angle, which we weren't really kind of talking about that. We're saying, this is just about nostalgia and fun and color. Like, this is about like the Kulfi girl. She's just a cool girl next door. Like, you know, that's sort of what we're trying to project. For a while, we also kept getting the question of like, this brand already exists. Why do we need you? You know, and I think that's so limiting. I feel like there's this tendency to compare and limit who we can be. And I'm like, there's so many brands out there. Why can't this specific iteration of brand exist in the world? And I think that was also like another thing, which I think now that we're like a few years into the journey, we have products, people have seen us bring the brand to life in so many different visual and interactive ways. I feel like that has drowned, or like that has kind of like the noise has sort of like lessened, because people now realize that, yes, we have a very specific, unique identity. It's not just about being South Asian. Definitely that is the heart of it. But there's so much more nuance and intersectionality in like what you can do with, what does it mean? Like, we have a specific origin story. Kulfi, me eating kulfi on a hot summer day in Delhi. Like, you know, like there's this like specificity that allows for so much creative expression there. And I think we're just getting started. There's so many brands that could exist that have South Asian founders, but it's specific to their experience and their story.
So there's so much to unpack in this, Priyanka. First of all, I was going to ask you, how did you come up with the name? So you've hinted at it. Give us the whole story. How did this come about?
I wanted the brand to be playful and joyful. I feel like often a lot of our beauty experiences have been traumatic, you know? It's been like, oh, like don't wear red lipstick because, you know, you look like you're trying to, you know, be out there, or, you know, wear this because it'll make your skin look lighter, and like all these things that kind of held us down. And I wanted to change that or shift that relationship, which is not to acknowledge that those experiences haven't shaped who we are, but how do we unlearn that and change our relationship with beauty to be more joyful?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We don't have to be always consigned to our traumas and our tragedies. Where is the everyday living? And that's what Kulfi is doing, which really resonates with me, because that's exactly what we are trying to do at Immigrantly, right? Everyday living. You said something else which makes a lot of sense to me, is people were skeptical. They were like, oh, you know, a couple of brands exist. And I led with that question as well. Obviously, my reason was different. I wanted to understand where you were coming from in that space. But it's so fascinating to me that there are so many beauty brands out there. But for immigrants or South Asians, it's as if people don't want to give us the permission to have more than one brand that speaks to our identities and who we are and what we can celebrate. To your point, if there's Estee Lauder and MAC and Bobby Brown and so many other brands, so why can't we have Kulfi and Huda and a ton of other brands in this space and celebrate all of them at the same time?
Absolutely. And actually, you know, it just occurred to me, the first question you asked, which was the cultural shock experience of like someone having a whole conversation with me, assuming I was some other brown girl. It makes me realize it's because we've been pushed to like a box and we're all very different. And I think that's really what it is. It's like, how do we celebrate our individuality and the fact that one brand is never going to be able to represent a billion plus people?
Absolutely.
We have to celebrate the fact that there are so many of us who can have so many different stories. So yeah, that's sort of, you know, definitely been part of the experience of trying to put Kulfi out there.
So let's talk about serving a particular community. Again, the universality of brand exists. Anybody can use Kulfi, but it's meant for a specific community as well. You've talked about how you think or you thought that South Asians felt excluded from beauty aisles, right? That's something that I hear from my daughter a lot as well. The skin tone, the skin color, the texture. But beauty is a multi-billion dollar industry, Priyanka, that really profits from people's insecurities. Telling others you're not enough, you're not good enough. How do you reconcile celebrating that identity joy part through makeup within an industry that thrives on telling us we're not enough?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. We specifically thought about that when we were launching concealer, right? Like with color, you can say, oh, like I have a blue eyeliner or a pink lipstick, I'm expressing myself through color. But a concealer is about concealing. It's about hiding. It's about covering. And I think the way that we thought about it and how we frame it is that ultimately it's a tool for you to decide how you want to show up in the world. And people have worn masks. People have worn symbols forever, right? And that they choose to do that because they want to show up in the world in a specific way. And we always want to like keep some certain things private. And so if you think about that, it's like you have that choice. I go on days when I have like no makeup on. I have my dark circles in their full glory and skin textures and, you know, and that's totally fine. And those are the days when I'm open and vulnerable and maybe want to be show up that way. But then there are days when I'm like, ready for, I don't want to say war, but ready for like, you know, to be in this like situation where I want to express my power in a specific way. And that's when I use these tools to kind of showcase a specific side of me. So I feel like it's more about like for us, it's been really about reframing, which is why usually none of our language would ever say, do this to make your nose look smaller or your lips look bigger. Like that's not like our advertising, like, you know, and a lot of artistry brands will lean to that because there's trying to teach you a specific technique to get to a specific look. But we're not about that. We're just saying like, use concealer how you want to, use our colors how you want to. We're not, never going to tell you, you need to fit into a specific aesthetic to use our products. You can show up as you are. And I feel like that's where like the difference is. And hopefully that comes through in our campaigns too, in terms of who we showcase on our feeds. We really use people who are people in our community. We cast on TikTok and we find people on TikTok. And that, you know, when we launched our brow gel in particular, that was very personal to me because I have thick brows and something that got made fun of growing up. And for our brow gel, the hero shot is of this girl with a unibrow. And it was just such an amazing moment for me because I wish I'd seen that girl growing up and the power of like using a brow gel, not to like tame or sort of like make your brows hide, but actually to celebrate them.
Oh my gosh, this reminds me of, I have full lips and growing up, everybody used to make fun of me. They were like, oh my gosh, your lips are so big. And I became so conscious I felt like, you know, there was something wrong with me. It took me a while to embrace the fullness of my lips, which is so crazy, right? So that story really, really resonates with me. Let's talk a little bit more about, you know, making sure that those stereotypes don't exist. Now, in South Asian cultures, colorism runs deep. Have you had moments where somebody came to you and said, well, where are the lighter shades of XYZ? Or do you have anything that will make my skin lighter or fairer? Have you had those conversations?
Definitely had more of the first one. I don't think anyone said, like, make my skin look lighter, at least in the US market. That's been good. It means that there is like a lot. People are sort of like much more aware of it. I do think that when we first launched, we actually had a smaller subset of shades that we actually, because we were such a, I mean, we are still a small company. We didn't have the money to launch 21 shades that we have now. But our shades actually went kind of like from medium to deep instead of the traditional very light to sort of medium, which most brands do. And we definitely had like people asking for lighter shades, but I think it came from more from like they wanted things that match their skin tones, because even within South Asian culture, there's so much diversity. It's not like we can bucket ourselves into a specific skin tone either. And so that's a need that we're still trying to fill. So I don't think any of it came from a place of colorism. I think it came from like, we need lighter shades because we exist too. Lighter skin tone South Asian people exist too. And I think that was totally fair. And, you know, that's kind of part of the reason we expanded our shade range in both directions, adding lighter and deeper shades when we did.
That makes a lot of sense. Absolutely right. And you're right. I mean, South Asians, they do exist on a spectrum of different shades and different ethnicities and different languages. People sometimes forget that.
Sanjeev's just received a decent bonus. Nice work, Sanjeev. He knows he could invest all of the money, but he's seen a new watch he likes. He's not worried. With his HSBC Premier bank account and access to their financial advice service, he can get a personalised plan for the future and know how much he can spend today. Everything's Premier when your bank account is. Search HSBC Premier. HSBC UK, opening up a world of opportunity. For financial advice, you need minimum £100,000. Other criteria and fees apply. Financial and other eligibility criteria apply for HSBC Premier.
Going back to your corporate experience, you did work in these corporate powerhouses in beauty, right? What lessons did you learn or take from those spaces that you've kept? And on the flip side, what are some of the lessons that you outright rejected and you were like, Goofy is not going to do this?
I can definitely answer what I outright rejected.
I love that.
My husband says like sometimes I'm a bit too spicy. He likes it. But like, so I think the outright rejection was, I think, you know, the reason that inclusivity has been such a hard challenge for the beauty industry, even though, again, it's not rocket science, really. And it took Fenty, for example, to come out with 40 shades for someone. It took Rihanna to like bless us with 40 shades before the industry started paying attention. Is because for bigger companies, if 90% of your customer base is happy and you're growing, you're not going to worry about the 10%. You just are like, you know, I'm happy continuing to grow this pie and focus on my 90%. And I think that's something that I was like, but this 10% also deserves to be loved, right? Like they also deserve options. And I think an important lesson for me was to find power and strength in that. Like there's a reason why people are skeptical. And that's an opportunity for me because they're not seeing what I'm seeing. So I definitely think that that was something that I took away. And I think in terms of like, what is something that I remember, like from a positive perspective? I think it's definitely listening to your community, which happened a lot at Ipsy. So, you know, we were constantly looking at community feedback, social media, and YouTube was, this was sort of the era where YouTube was at its peak, and it kind of like broke down that traditional relationship that brands had with consumers, and it became very different. Huda, that was kind of when she first emerged and, you know, exploded on the scene because she was actually connecting with the consumer in a very different way that nobody had ever done before. And so that's something that I thought was like, wow, this is powerful. Like someone who's just an everyday person like me can also start something and speak to my consumer and build a community without necessarily having all the money to run a big media campaign. And so that's been, it's still our community, our social media is still the biggest way we speak to our customer.
Priyanka, what has been the biggest surprise so far?
Sometimes I'm just like, absolutely love the fact that people love us. Maybe it's a little bit of imposter syndrome, which I don't have as much of anymore. But I do think that, you know, it's this, you know, sometimes we'll get messages being like, I love Kofi, I love everything you do. And for someone to like love a brand, and you know, even you describing your daughter, I think it's so affirming. It feels really good, kind of keeps you going. People sometimes message me saying like, I never found a concealer shade till I found Kofi, or this has changed my life in this way. And I think I have so much gratitude for those experiences. And it's something that I didn't understand my own power. And I think the power is in all of us, right? Like you doing this podcast, like understanding and owning that your voice has power and you can use it to change things and have a positive experience on people. And so I think that's been, for me, a personal learning, because I'm an introvert. I'm very much like someone who likes to be behind the scenes, but recognizing that showing up as I am, like not a conventional beauty influencer celebrity, but people relate to that and there's power in it.
Absolutely. And there's audience for everything, right? There's a consumer for everything. And recognizing that and honoring that is so important. And you are seeing success, right? Kofi recently launched in the UK. You are at Sephora. Again, my daughter dragged me to Sephora to show me the whole Kofi aisle. But success often forces smaller brands to dilute their original voice. Are you scared of that?
I feel like we've been very lucky that we haven't had to, because from the first launch itself, there was something about the brand that was resonating, maybe the joyful positioning, like the hints of nostalgia that was resonating beyond the South Asian community. And, you know, people were like, oh, Nazar, like they kind of wanted to know more. And I feel like we haven't had to shy away from that. We're still like very much leaning loud and proud into the moments where we want to speak to without having to dilute anything. And I think it's just about like, how do we bring more people into that conversation? So we so far haven't had to, and hopefully we won't, because ultimately it's like, why do people come to Kofi versus like, there's so many other brands exist, right? It's like, it'll only happen if we can stay consistent. People know what they can come to us for over time. And we have to stay true to that. So even when we did lip balms, we just launched our glossing lip balms, which were really beautiful. And there's a lot of lip balms in the market, for sure. But I think what people loved was that we had this South Asian treats kind of angle to it. So we have one that's like chai scented, and we have Black Forest cake, and it was like a 90s birthday theme campaign launch. And so those are like such specific experiences that you're not going to get any other brand. And at the same time, they're beautiful products, so anyone could use them. And, you know, it doesn't have to be only South Asian people who are using that lip balm. So we're trying to like speak to our authentic stories and experiences that everyone can hopefully participate in.
Priyanka, let's talk a little bit about your own relationship with makeup. Now, I read somewhere that you didn't grow up wearing makeup and you only began experimenting in your 20s. What was your relationship prior and later? And was there ever a moment where you felt that you were contradicting yourself by launching a makeup and beauty brand when you weren't into makeup as much?
Actually, you know, I didn't wear makeup till my 20s. And, you know, it's sort of interesting because my formative experiences with makeup were always about like, oh, like I said, growing up, it was like, oh, you're wearing makeup because you want to attract boys or you want to make your skin look lighter. And then when I actually entered the workforce, we went through this like professional training. And one of the things that they said was to wear makeup. And that again became like, oh, now I have to wear makeup to appear professional. That's so weird. And then I went to a makeup counter, and my first experience at a makeup counter was someone telling me, oh, you need this to make your nose look smaller, make your lips look bigger. And I was like, wait, like these all these things I have to fix. So kind of all of these experiences sort of kept me away from engaging in makeup. And then I started working at Estee Lauder on the strategy side, so more from a business perspective. But then I was surrounded by people who love beauty and makeup, and they'd be like, take this, wear this. I'm surrounded by it. So I'm like, okay, let me sort of like play around with it. And in that moment, right, in my late 20s, I'm discovering makeup on my own terms. Like, I'm just having fun with it. And I'm like, wait, I can put on highlighter. That's when the ABH highlighter palette was really trending. And I'm like, I can look, put on highlighter and be glowy and shiny. And like, I love this. This is fun. This glitter eyeshadow is fun. And that was my aha moment of being like, it doesn't have to come with judgment. It can be playful. It can be fun. And so for me, it wasn't really contradictory because it was very much like my experience of like rediscovering, unlearning that makeup has to be only for specific things and learning that it can just be a way to express myself and how I feel in the day that I wanted to bring forth with the brand. And that's why the brand is, you know, called Kofi and has these products that are very approachable and very much about bringing joy to your everyday routine, because that was truly sort of my experience. And coming in from that outsider lens, I actually think allows me to put myself in the shoes of someone who might have felt that way and might feel like, oh, makeup is maybe not for me, but we're here to make it easy. And we're here to tell you that, you know, you can have fun with it. You have permission to be part of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And somebody like me who just gets lost in all the details of contouring, shades, eye shades, and eyeliners. It's like, yeah, make it simple for me. Just give me first sari, I'll wear it, I'll be happy, I'll be a contented person. Let's talk about inclusivity, a term that we hear so often in the US, mostly in performative context. Because honestly, if you ask me from my vantage point, people still don't know what inclusivity really means. So I want to ask you, because you really embraced it, what does authentic, lasting inclusivity in beauty look like to you?
We're really about showcasing the people or partnering with people who are already doing the work. I don't think like I'm saying something that hasn't been said before. It's like, how do we give people who are doing the work the platform? So, for example, our branding, we worked with Badal Patel for our branding, and our first campaign, we worked with another like South Asian creative. And so there was this team that was put together that hadn't ever come together, and like they were working behind the scenes. I talked about our blog, and we had a lot of up and coming South Asian writers who were writing stories for us that, again, had never had a platform to write before. You know, when you look at our social media, when we're partnering, we're always looking to partner with up-and-coming influencers and creators who we often were the first people who send them PR. And, you know, they obviously grow and evolve in their influencer journey. But what we want to do is really partner with people who represent our consumer. And so for me, that's really sort of how we approach it. So it's less of a checkbox of being like, I need this shade and I need this whatever, you know, like, because I think that approach doesn't work, right? That approach ends up becoming performative. It ends up feeling, even to the consumer, it ends up feeling like, oh, you just did this because you're checking a box, versus like, let's honor our actual consumer. And how can we showcase who is who's buying our product in our campaigns, but also behind the scenes in terms of the teams we're working with or who we're partnering with for specific pieces, and close the loop in that sense. Like, even again, having more South Asian founders or South Asian beauty editors, South Asian beauty merchants, I think there's this whole space that we've barely scratched the surface of, like creating equity in those rooms where these decisions are being made. Often we're fed a very specific version of beauty because it's decided by a very specific group of people.
Okay, Priyanka, I'm going to put you in the hot seat. What is your favorite Kofi product? Give us one or two.
It's Zuddy Eyes eyeshadow. I was intimidated by eyeshadow. I was like, well, how do I do this? I have to do a cut crease, I have to put on all these brushes, and you know, and so for me, Zuddy Eyes eyeshadow was everything I want in an eyeshadow, a one and done look. Beautiful shimmer, especially the shade Sona Sona, if you've tried it. But you can use your fingers to apply it. And then you have like an editorial look in less than a minute. You have an eyeshadow that I guarantee you, if you wear it and you walk into a room, someone's going to ask you, where is your eyeshadow from?
Oh, I'm going to go to Sephora and buy that. Is there a backstory to how the eyeshadow came about?
Yeah. So I, for sure, I wanted to have something that celebrated the shimmer and glitter. And we called it Zari eyes because Zari is the traditional silver and gold threads in a lot of South Asian clothing. And so to me, this was sort of that perfect topper. You know, Zari is kind of like that embellishment. It's that embellishment that kind of gives that your outfit that extra little like fun, right? And so I think for me, that was this eyeshadow. It's like, you are beautiful as you are, but if you want a little embellishment, like this is sort of what you can add.
And what's next for Kulfi? Other than the office space, what should we expect in the coming days, weeks, months, years?
Yeah, I mean, I think more of sort of what we're doing in terms of obviously more products that we are going to build that speak to these stories and colors that we can bring to the market. We just launched in the UK. We talked about that. So expanding our presence there. I mean, ultimately, like, I want to be a global brand. I want Kulfi to be a global brand because it stands for this very specific lifestyle to be something that is across different categories of beauty products as well, not just makeup. I think we could definitely play into hair care or fragrance and you know, because it's sort of more about the everyday life we talked about, right? That we're leaning into. But those are sort of like long-term visions, I think, in the next year. It's just kind of continuing doing what we're doing and taking it step by step.
I love the long-term vision, right? Opportunities are endless. And I'm so glad that you have created this space that's giving so many South Asian young girls, especially, something to celebrate and something to relate to. It's so, so important. Priyanka, in the end, if you were to define the United States of America in the context of its exclusivity in the beauty space, how would you do that?
I think a word is striving, I would say, because I think we do have people who are trying to make it better and showing up every day to make it better and being celebrated for that. You know, it's just even for us, like when we first launched, literally like barely any budget. But, you know, there would be editors, influencers who celebrated us and showed up for us in a way that I never expected or paid for, you know, if I wanted to. And so I do think there's this sentiment of like, we need to do better and we're going to work on doing things better, but there's a long way to go. So that's really kind of how I would define it.
Thank you so much, Priyanka. Again, where can people find Kulfi if somebody doesn't know about it still? Is there a place, a website they can go to?
Yes, our website is kulfibeauty.com. And then you can shop us in store at Sephora across the US and Canada in all stores. And we are on social. So our Instagram is at kulfi.beauty and same as TikTok. Those are the two channels we're most active on. So you can know more about our products and who we are.
Thank you, Priyanka. This was so good.
Thank you so much, Satya.
Well, this conversation reminds me of how important human connection is, how we can go far beyond our own bubbles and connect at granular levels. Makeup is something that is universally worn and used. Why limit its use and universality to some? I'm so glad I sat down with Priyanka, virtually of course, to talk about Kulfi. As I mentioned during my interview, it's my daughter's favorite brand. And I am so glad that I was introduced to it by her. If you haven't tried it, go to Sephora nearby and try it out, especially the first sari shade that I was wearing today. You'll see it on our Instagram in our reels. Hope you like it. This episode was produced and written by me, Sadia Khan. The editorial review is done by Shay Yu. Our incredible sound designer and editor is Lou Raskin. Our theme music is by Simon Hutchinson, other music by Epidemic Sound. Come back next week when we talk about a book that I've been reading recently with its authors, and I will tell you what I am reading with that particular thing. Until then, take care and be kind to others and to yourself.